Yes, Monday Night History. Quite often when you read or hear about World War One, the focus is on soldiers stuck in the muddy trenches spread for miles across northern France and Belgium, and the misery and the appalling slaughter. Soldiers fighting gallantly in the battle for freedom and democracy. What's often left out of this story, of course, about how as the Great War dragged on and the casualties mounted, is how more and more soldiers and citizens began protesting against the conflict and started calling for a negotiated peace as the horrors of the Western Front became apparent. A young soldier from Broken Hill, Private Ted Ryan, was among them. Now, he'd been one of the many enthusiastic early volunteers who'd enlisted in Australia to go and fight in the battlefields of Europe, but it didn't take him long before he became fiercely opposed to what was going on. So what changed his mind about the war, and how on earth did he end up having to face not one, not two, but four courts-martial during the war? Historian Douglas Newton stumbled across Private Ryan's story and became intrigued, so intrigued, in fact, that he has written a new book about him entitled Private Ryan and the Lost Peace, and he joins us this evening. Douglas, good evening, and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening to you, Philip. Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, Ted Ryan was basically a boy from Broken Hill, wasn't he, along with his brothers, volunteered to join quite early on in the war, and this was a common enough story. Tell us a bit about his background.
Yeah, look, he's a Broken Hill boy. He's from that crucible of trade unionism and industrial unrest there from the 1890s forward. He comes, in a sense, from a very unlucky family. He's orphaned by the age of 10. He and his two brothers are raised by their aunt and uncle. And, he's very much part of the Broken Hill scene. He's a keen member of the Amalgamated Miners Association band. Mm-hmm. So we know that he's very much in tune with the spirit of Broken Hill. And yet, like so many, his two brothers also, he's dispersed in the early months of the war. The impact of the war on Broken Hill is absolutely disastrous. Half the workforce is spread across the land as the zinc concentrate contracts and so on, many of them to German firms, are all lost. So under the shadow of unemployment, Ted Ryan and his two younger brothers, one goes to Sydney and joins up instantly. That's the youngest, Harry. And Tom and Ted end up in Perth. Ted Ryan, the eldest boy, in fact, is the last to join up. He joins up in September 1915.
That's interesting, isn't it? So the output of the mines kind of, yep, really, I wasn't aware of that, sort of ceased because of the war, because they couldn't.
Well, not entirely ceased, but at least half the workforce is dispersed. And indeed across Australia as a whole, the unemployment is the background, I guess, to a great many enlistments, shall we say. That old recruiting sergeant unemployment is part of many stories. And I listened to many of them through my own ears. So many of those sound items at the Australian War Memorial from very elderly diggers reflecting back on their life and why they enlisted. Of course, part of it is patriotic enthusiasm and from their most generous spirits to save people whom you believe to be under threat far away. But also many of them are very, very frank about saying, my life was a living hell. 6 shillings a day guaranteed, 1 shilling held back for my family. This was something that induced me to enlist. And I suspect in Ted's case too, from Perth.
How did you come across this story anyway?
Oh, look, it's a very lucky story. I have a close friend in England, a man called Duncan Marler. He wrote one of the best books about Britain's rush to war. It's called Fatal Fortnight. And he and I have been looking at the peace movement, I guess, for a couple of decades together. And he suddenly wrote to me and said, have you seen that absolute cracker of a letter from an Australian soldier in Ramsay MacDonald's letter files? And I had been through Ramsay MacDonald's letter files. And just to remind you, he is the former chair of the Parliamentary Labour Party in Britain, who resigned in August 1914, utterly appalled at the descent into war and browned off that his own party didn't even protest, but rushed, as it were, to the colours along with everyone else. So he had become the best hated man in Britain during 1914 and 15, stuck to his dissent very, very solidly in Parliament. And there were about 35 with him, dissidents, shall we say. But he is very much the most well-known opponent of the war and indeed passionate advocate of accepting the American offers to mediate peace.
Right.
So my Ted Ryan writes to him.
What does he say in his letter? What's the letter say?
Well, it's an absolute crack of a letter written in October 1916. The context of this, of course, the personal context, he had been injured, in fact, 105 years ago tonight, in late June 1916, just on the eve of the Somme battle. He is perhaps very close to a shell burst, for he gets shell burns and abrasions to his face. He'd spent a month in hospitals, all that stream of human wreckage from the Somme battle before him, then goes to his hardening and drafting depot and writes a letter denouncing the war makers, denouncing those who are prolonging the war, in his view, unnecessarily. And he is aware, by instinct almost, that this is a war no longer clearly a war of defence, but a war of conquest, a war of aggression, a war for the aggrandisement of empire on every side. He denounces those who have insisted we cannot end this war by negotiation.
Okay, so he witnesses all these soldiers, because after they come out of hospital, they're often sent to hardening up camps, aren't they? Which is,
yes, they
which
are
places where they're basically, told to toughen up, ready to send them back in again.
Yep, trained again. By the thousand, our big one is at Perham Down. Mm. It's there just on the edge of Salisbury Plain, and that's where Ted Ryan ended up in the early week of October. And more context, of course, remember our conscription referendum was coming up, and the soldiers were to vote in the middle of the month. And Ted Ryan objected very much to the circulars that they were all given, one signed by Birdwood and one signed by Billy Hughes, urging the soldiers to give a resounding yes. And my Ted Ryan was insisted that the only blokes who were going to vote yes who were those who hadn't yet been out to face the music, as he put it, because the industrialised killing, the mechanised slaughter, the mass killing by industrial means was, quote, more frightful than anyone could imagine.
Mm. What, did MacDonald use the letter in any way?
No, he didn't. I looked and looked to find it, but I suspect he thought this young Australian would have troubles enough without him mentioning him by name. But certainly in his diary, which I went through, MacDonald says, look, I have received hundreds of letters from the soldiers caught up in the great kill chain. They are far less fire eaters than those stay-at-home politicians. They are the ones who are eagerly looking to back me up. And indeed, in his letter to MacDonald, Ted Ryan praises he and all his colleagues in the Independent Labor Party and in the Union for Democratic Control that are pushing very hard during autumn of 1916 for peace this winter.
I'm with Douglas Newton. He's an historian. He's written a story about an Australian soldier from Broken Hill called Private Ryan, Ted Ryan, who joined up. He became very opposed to the war and was subject to not one but four courts-martial. Was he sent back to the front after the hospital and the hardening up camp?
Yes, he was, but that took some doing. He took a first AWOL, as many soldiers did from his camp in the UK. He did this during December 1916. And in fact, I often do this in the book just to remind people of the context. That is the very month that the Germans offered to end the war without preconditions, round the table by negotiation, 12th of December 1916. The Americans followed up on the 19th of December, very clearly offering to mediate peace as well. And the Russians, the French, the Italians, and then the British said no. And Ted Ryan skipped camp for 5 days. A month later, January 1917, with that peace offer rejected firmly by Lord George in Britain, Ted Ryan took off again. He got marriage leave, which was for 10 days. He stayed away for 5 weeks. When he came back to Perham Down, and on each occasion, I should stress, he always came back voluntarily. He simply turned up, like so many of them did, and said, look, you know, I couldn't take it anymore. All these mortar shells, all this extra training and whatnot. I had shell shock, for God's sake. And indeed, his medical records list his shell shock on 5 occasions as occasioning his hospitalization: nervous breakdown, shell burns to the face, and S shock, yeah, repeated there 5 times.
Today, of course, we would recognise this PTSD in a big way.
Well, indeed.
He found himself court-martialed not once but 4 times. He was found guilty each time, and of course,
yep,
at that stage, there was a very dim view taken about any kind of shirking or desertion, and you're often shot. In fact, he was sentenced to death.
Sentenced to death. Well, 121 Australian soldiers were sentenced to death altogether. He is one of those who was not shot, and indeed none of them were shot, and in there lies an intriguing tale. Our Defence Act was pretty stunning across the world. Our original Defence Act of 1903 did subject all our blokes to the Army Act of 1881, the British Army Act. That's the essential compilation of all the defence rules and so on, and the military law. But largely through the intervention of Henry Bourne Higgins, radical liberal, our Defence Act in 1903 had voluntary clauses, and it had a very famous Section 98, which specified no member of the Australian Defence Force shall be sentenced to death by court-martial, except for 4 very restricted reasons. And essentially it was mutiny or desertion to the enemy, giving up your fort or ship or post to the enemy, being in correspondence with the enemy, or fighting for the enemy. Mm. You had to positively assist the enemy. To simply desert, you could not be, under our Defence Act, even sentenced to death. Under the British Army, of course, there were 29 reasons why you could face the death penalty, and more than 300 of their blokes were shot, but none of ours shot. I wish I could tell you, Phil, it was because our politicians had such high principles. I'm afraid that is not the reason. The real reason is that, the 2 referenda we had here for introducing conscription,
which were both lost.
Yep. October 16, December 17. The politicians, above all Hughes and Pearce, decided they could not get that Defence Act amended. To do so, they would have to get it through our Parliament, of course. They didn't want to risk it. Instead, they had their eye on the prize, namely conscription. So they promised that there would not be capital punishment at the front. Having promised it once, they could not resile from that promise. And yet, our officers did sentence 121 blokes. But they all, in a way, were hiding behind the cover that all these sentences to death were provisional.
Would never be carried out. That's right. Exactly.
Never be carried out, because Birdwood, and of course after him Monash, would have to commute them in view of our Defence Act. Mm. But nonetheless, they wanted to frighten the troops.
Well, he was lucky to survive, because, I mean, plenty of people didn't.
Very lucky.
60,000 or so did not on the Western Front.
That's true, Philip, and indeed the latest figures, we think it's closer to 72,000.
Yeah.
If we count the suicides, if we count those who indeed succumb within the first months after the armistice and the first years. Mm. David Noonan's written a wonderful book called Recounting the Casualties, Those We Forget. We think it's 72,000.
It's wholesale slaughter in a country, the population of which was, less than a quarter of what it is now.
Well, that's right. Just under 5 mil, we send more than 300,000 abroad. But what is stunning is that, when I think maybe some people would think, gosh, this bloke's talking about a rather bad apple. This is a rather exceptional Anzac, isn't he? He walked away from fatigue duties, never under fire, I should stress. But there were, in fact, 23,000 courts-martial in the AIF. That's 1 in 14 Australian. It's double, triple, and 4 times the rate of other elements within the BEF. And maybe it's because these guys thought they were volunteers.
Yeah. What happened to him in the end? The war ended. He survived, and he was very lucky to survive. Did he make his way back to Australia or not?
He did. Look, after his death sentence, September 17, he spent a year in a British prison, released again to the Western Front. He walks away again, gets AWOL that last time, Australian Punishment Compound, then comes back to Australia on a ship like so many of them during the first early months of 1919, goes back to Broken Hill and works in the mines for the BHP, and indeed marries in the 20s. has two lovely kids, a girl and a boy, meets a lass from the Baby Health Centre, a Sydney girl, comes back to Sydney briefly, then off to New Zealand, then back 5 years later in the early 30s. He's living in Wirunga. Sadly, he dies in a simple bicycle accident in October 1943, aged 52. Mm-hmm. Having survived the Somme, four courts martial and a death sentence, mm-hmm. he is killed in a collision with another bicycle deep in the night. Coming home from a late shift, he worked at the glassworks there in the city ACI. Mm. Still a young man, just 52. God knows what, I mean, to have almost been plumed, as we used to say in Vietnam, turned into red mist. He must have been very close. The night he was injured, five blokes killed and 17 wounded.
Yeah.
There it is. Exactly. He suffered and he tried to save all the private Ryans, not just himself. He left us this wonderful letter and indeed a statement to his court martial in September 17, where he made his principled political objections to the war crystal clear. And I reproduce them in the book.
There you are. All right. Our guest has been Douglas Newton, author of Private Ryan and the Lost Peace. Douglas, great to have your time.
Thank you so much, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.